Hear Me Out is a podcast that welcomes everyone from all walks of life to listen to the show. We want everyone to be part of the conversation around marriage, relationships, and life. Having said that, the content you're about to hear does not include those relationships that struggle with domestic violence. It is important to seek professional help if you or someone you know is experiencing domestic violence. Please reach out to local authorities, shelters, or hotlines for support and assistance, some of which will be linked in the show notes for tonight's episode. Domestic violence is a serious issue that requires immediate attention and should never be taken lightly. This program contains strong language and discussion of topics that may be sensitive for some listeners. Listener discretion is advised. I know the waters run deep, it's the secrets that they keep can't be sold. I see wisdom on the shoulders of the others and the things we've been told. Remember when life seemed so simple and every day was better than the last? I asked myself, how can it be so simple? And we're back. Natalie Warner, Chris Williamson. This is part two of our 10-part initial series. And we have had an interesting couple of weeks. We dropped part one just a couple of weeks ago on April 1st. Everybody thought it was an April Fool's joke. It is clearly not. And we are now back to record part two. And we are going to take a further step into the conversation that we started a couple of weeks ago. First, Natalie, how are you feeling after the first episode drop? We have that first episode jitters behind us now. And you've been engaging a good number of folks that follow you on social media in the past couple of weeks. How has that been? And how have you felt in the fallout for part one, let's say that?
It's been good. I think that when we can explain exactly what we're doing, what we would like to do is to just bring people back to the table and into the conversation so that they're engaged in their life and the choices that they're making are active and not passive. And they're not just accepting things because they're told to, but really thinking about things and about life.
Yeah.
I think that it takes away a lot of the intensity of what people think they should be doing. Mm-hmm. And it just allows people to just think differently. Like, what did you think your marriage would look like? What did you think it should look like? Mm-hmm. Did you contribute to it in that way? What is it missing? Why is your marriage not working out the way that you had wanted it to, the way that you thought it would?
Yeah.
And, you know, I get a lot of people on my feed that are, you know, there's a lot of resentment. They're pretty disgruntled. And they're like, well, this is the way it is. And so it is what it is. This is my life now. I'm not going to change it. Mm-hmm. To me, that's not a broken marriage, because here's why. Both parties are completely aware of what's going on. They might not like it, but they don't like the alternative more. Mm-hmm. So this is what we have. Our choices brought us here. Unfortunately, we don't like the choices outside of here. So we're going to stay here.
Yeah.
This is where I am.
Yeah.
So for people like that, I'm not going to follow anyone around and be like, hey, are you happy? Are you doing this? Like, that's not my job and I don't want it to be.
Yeah.
When people come to the table with that, I always try to gear them more towards a support group. You know where you are. You're actively choosing it. You're completely aware. Mm-hmm. This is the best that you have or can have or want to have outside of this option. So it's time to find a support group and it's time to start working on being able to refocus and reframe your situation so that the resentment doesn't continue to build, but it becomes something that you're like, okay, this is my life. How am I now going to make it work for me so that I can also enjoy the rest of my life, even though it's not the way that I thought or wanted it to be?
Well, you know, and it's an interesting question. As you're talking about that, I want to back up a little bit. I want to ask you, you said something in part one that was really interesting. And I was doing a quality check on it or re-listening to it prior to our second part. You mentioned, you know, folks coming to your table, you can't come to my table unless ... or only if ... I wanted to ask you about, really, I guess I'm not going to have you give me a stat or anything like that, but what do you think the percentage is, just a rough estimate, of folks who come to the table only when things are not good? You know, I think that that's an interesting question, because there's a lot of people that would say, well, nothing is going wrong with my marriage right now. Everything seems to be really good, or so I think. So there's no need to come to the table until something happens. And I don't want to say it's too late, because I rarely think it's too late when two people really love each other and they're in for the long haul. Is there an overwhelming percentage of folks who come to the table with you or come consult you when it's too late in your eyes, or they have to go a different direction maybe?
I do get a fair amount of people who are like on the way out. Like the resentment is so high. The anger is so strong, because after feeling things like rejection for so long, the wall is there and they have no intention of taking it down. Like it isn't happening in their lifetime. Like they're angry. They feel like you're just stolen. They're like, that's all she wrote. I want out. How do I leave? Because that's where I'm like, okay, I understand you want to leave, but how you leave is a reflection of you. So, you know, if you don't, you know, down, out, scrap, battle, whatever, you have to be fair. You got to grit your teeth. And the point isn't to move into anger and live there. It's to honor your feelings, your experiences, take what you can belong into the rest of your life.
Yeah.
But I do get a very large portion of people who are like, what can I do? I don't know even how to bring up this conversation. How do I say this without hurting their feelings? What if they think that I want other things? Like, people have become so afraid to tell their partners how they feel that they would rather fake it. They would rather be like, no, 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 nothing's changed. You're telling me you guys have been together for 20 years. You've had that many experiences and interactions and nothing has changed. There are no feelings, no nothing, hopes, dreams, nothing's evolved at all. Nothing, zero, zilch.
Yeah.
Come on. What's crazy to me is like, you know, I know it's uncomfortable because it's supposed to be like, people get in their heads that's like the soulmate, right? It's effortless. It's supposed to be effortless. It's supposed to be like this. It's not like that.
Yeah, boy, have I heard that a lot. You know, depending on the source, you hear obviously one of two things. Marriage is either very, very difficult or it's very, very easy. You hear people that are soulmates, that are in that relationship with the person that they just feel like everything is very effortless. And then you hear about those people that are into what they felt was a soulmate. And then when they get into the grind of marriage, they realize it's a lot of work. You know, when my wife and I were dating, we had conversations about marriage, probably not as much as we should have, but we did. We had conversations about what marriage would look like, what our core values were, what would change if things changed, if one of us sort of flipped on the other one, or things of that nature. I think those conversations, even if you feel like they don't need to happen, should happen. What do you think couples should be discussing before they get married?
Can I ask, is this your first marriage?
This is not my first. This is my second, but her first.
Okay.
Yeah.
So did you have conversations in your first marriage?
Oh yeah.
Did you? Okay.
Yeah, we did. Okay. We definitely did. My first marriage, it was interesting because we were together, I want to say 9 years or almost 10 years before we got married.
Right.
And we got married and our marriage lasted probably less than 3 years before we decided to end it and part ways. With my second marriage, my current marriage, I've been married for, it'll be 10 years next year. We've been together for 11 and we got married in under a year. We just sort of knew. I knew when I saw her that she was it, that she was the one, and I didn't waste any time. But we still, even in that context, we still sat down and had conversations about what marriage should look like. I was perhaps a little more fearful because I had been through it once before. So I wanted to make sure that I wasn't doing anything that, you know, I know it's obviously a different person. It's a different way of loving. So you have to really have those conversations. But I guess my long game question to you is, many people have conversations prior to marriage. What should those conversations look like? What should we be talking about before we decide to walk down the aisle with someone and make them our life partner?
Okay. If we scrap the one size fits all marriage and relationship long-term as like the family unit and just be like, okay, so as long as you reach this, 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 and this check mark, you're good to go. You have to stay that in those realms. If we can get rid of that and be like, okay, instead of sitting down and blindly just being like, okay, we're going to get married and we're going to touch on these things. I want two kids. Great. You want two kids. Great. Okay. I want to work 9 to 5. You want to work 9 to 5. They work like this. Okay. I like to vacation here. You like to vacation here. We go to church here or we don't go to church here or yada, yada, yada. Right. And it's like, okay, so that all checks off. Great. Then they don't go into detail.
Mm-hmm.
That's where the marriage is going to live, though, is in the details. So it's like, we're going to be monogamous. Yes, we will only be intimate with one another. Great. Okay. Well, our lives are a really long time. Let's say we're 30 and let's say we're going to, you know, live to, let's say 80. It's going to be longer than that, but let's say 80. Let's say we're going to be married for 50 years. What is 50 years of sex going to look like?
Mm-hmm.
And I understand that things are going to happen along the way, but are you always going to try? Like, and will you always try with your mental health and physical health?
Mm-hmm.
Instead of sitting down and being like, let's get married and we'll have kids and this is where we're going to work. People need to sit down and start going like, how do you want the marriage to look?
Mm-hmm.
What do you want from me? How can I contribute to your life so that you're getting the most out of it? Because this is what I want in my life. Yeah, I want to work and I want to have children and I want us to travel and that, but I also have my own hopes and dreams that I want to accomplish. I would love it to have your support to accomplish these things. What do you want to accomplish that I can also contribute to? Because life mm-hmm. is a really long time and kids are going to grow up and leave. And then what? Like, mm-hmm. you still have to have your own identity. You have to bring something to the table.
Yeah.
You have to. It's like, it's great that your children or spouse can do so much, but it's like, it's still their stuff.
Mm-hmm.
When you're deciding to spend your life with somebody and it's this massive partnership, these big conversations need to happen beyond how many kids we're going to have and where we're going to invest and where we want to live. And do we want to go to Cuba or, you know, here? This is a really, really, really long time for me personally. And I said this to Dan, I don't want to just sit on the couch and watch reruns. Like, I don't want to live passively. That's not something I'm interested in at all. Now, I know there are people who enjoy that. And when they partner with other people who enjoy that, it works super well. If it's not broke, mm-hmm. don't fix it.
Mm-hmm.
Don't fix it.
Yeah.
Your relationship yeah. doesn't have to look like anyone else's. It just has to make you and your partner happy. It's whatever formula you two design that works, have at it. But in order to get to that formula, to get to that effortless soulmate look that everybody wants, that's all in the details. For example, it's one thing for me to say, you know, this is my love language and this is how I show love. And that's great at the beginning. But if I pay attention, if I really care for my partner, not only do I love them the way that I know or I feel, but I learn to love them the way that they want to, the way that they require, the way that they grow. It's not about me all the time. Right?
Yeah.
So I learned those things in the details. And you get to the details when you have this safe arena and space to be vulnerable and speak to one another.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. One more time for the people in the back.
When you have that, when you can say anything you want to your partner and it's tactful and has compassion and it's a conversation and not a battleground, it's completely different. Mm-hmm. It's a completely different ballgame when you're not throwing in all this energy that is really unnecessary. You're just speaking to one another.
Mm-hmm.
You're giving information. It doesn't mean it's going to happen, but yeah. if I can't speak to you about things I want, things I like, things I desire, risks I want to take, if I'm too afraid to do those things, that's going to leave a lot off the table.
Yeah.
That's going to leave a lot of confusion. That's going to leave a lot of needing to strategize. And I think once you have to start strategizing to get your partner to go along or to do those things, I mean, you basically are just have a marionette. Like there's nothing authentic really happening here.
Mm-hmm.
It's one thing if it's like positive manipulation for an addict to get them to go to a counselor, to get them to go to whatchamacallit. It's another thing when you're finessing your partner along to get your way in everything.
Mm-hmm. Hearing you talk about the formulas, and we'll definitely be talking about formulas. We talked about a lot about that on part one. I guess the question I have is just, does the fleshing out of a formula, because I know everybody's different, obviously, and every formula's, no two formulas are going to be the same.
Right.
Does fleshing out that formula begin with having those conversations that go below the surface? Because you talked about surface level conversations. We'd like to do this. We'd like to be here. We'd like to act this way. This is how we'd like to see it. But they don't tend to go deeper than that. Is that really sort of step one in sort of beginning to figure out what your formula is going to be? Is just forcing yourself to sit down and not forcing the other person, but forcing yourself to sit down and both of you coming to the table and having those deeper conversations so you can figure out, hey, this is what I like, or this is what I really want, or maybe we could try this, or maybe we could do this. You know, it doesn't have to be sexual, it could be anything, but just anything in your marriage. Does it start with that? Just having those deeper conversations?
Absolutely. Because it's the details that help build the formula.
Mm-hmm.
That's where we find out that we all don't want to be soccer parents. We all don't want to live in suburbia. We all don't want to go to Disney. We all don't want to do retreats. We all don't want to backpack.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
As long as we follow that one size and we just blindly be like, we're going to get married and it's just going to be like effortless and good because it was for whomever, even though you never saw behind the scenes. That's where you build it. It's like, if you don't know the details of what your partner wants and you don't tell them what you really want, what are you doing? What's really apparent to me is that people did not only did they not marry their best friends, they didn't even fucking marry people they liked much.
Yeah, yeah.
Good God.
Yeah.
Marriage is this huge partnership where you guys can work together and get everything you've ever wanted. It's literally why you chose to come together and do this.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of doing the hard work to get everything you wanted, it all fell apart and it was easier to just throw in confusion, resentment, and then build a bridge. And one is just more than ready to burn it.
Mm-hmm. A lot of the reason, I think a lot of people that will be hearing this, that will probably be talking to you in the talkbacks for this episode, will talk about fear and the idea that fear controls a lot of the conversations that we don't have in our relationships. I was just talking to Vanessa the day before yesterday, and one of the things I told her was the best part of this entire process for me is that I don't have to be afraid to come to the table and to tell you what I like in any given situation now. Like, I can just tell you, this is what I like, and I know I'm no longer afraid that you're going to jump down my throat or misinterpret it. Even if we don't understand each other, we'll talk it out and we'll figure out what it is that I'm actually getting at and what I like. There's no fear there. A lot of marriages have that fear, though. And I wonder if you can talk a little bit about getting past that fear. What needs to be done in a relationship, in a marriage, when somebody is afraid to talk to the other person because of how they'll react? What is the responsibility of that other person in that scenario?
Well, here's the thing. If you are somebody that struggles with having control over your emotions and therefore your reactions, if you're somebody that is inconsistent, like given the same information on any given day, your reaction can be like from 1 to 10 and who knows where,
mm-hmm.
that is the type of person you are. It comes off as really untrustworthy.
Mm-hmm.
So people don't want to give you information because they don't want that confrontation. They don't want to be that messenger that shot.
Yeah.
For no other reason than it's Tuesday at 4 p.m. Do you know what I mean? And your sugar's lower, whatever that looks like, yeah. Right? Like you have to be in control of that. So when people aren't in control, when they behave like that, it's really difficult to go to the table and give them information. And then when people do go to the table, it's probably patted down because you're trying to navigate to give them all the information they require. But it's kind of like going over landmines. Mm-hmm. And it's like, you don't know if they're going to snap or not. And then you're like, well, when do I give them information? When they're in a good mood? When's that? A lot of people will be like, well, you know what? I'm going to take them out for dinner and tell them. And they think that's such a great idea. The problem with that is that now you're taking this time together, this, you know, giving information, communication, conversation, and you're putting it in this box where the other person cannot have an authentic reaction, or that's what you're hoping for.
Mm-hmm.
If they have that, or if they want to have that big reaction, they cannot have that. So now you've manipulated the situation so that you're out, and short of your life being on the line or being hurt physically, I totally understand that. Yeah, yeah. Do not under any circumstances be alone with those people. But when you're giving someone information and it's just like, oh, I'm uncomfortable, they're going to yell, or they're going to do this, or they're going to do that, it's because you're not sure how they're going to respond. People like that, it's so erratic that it's like, fuck.
Mm-hmm.
If those people also who struggle with, you know, expressing themselves, struggle with being able to identify their feelings, or if they struggle with ego and, you know, not taking everything to heart, or they like to play the blame game, you know, things like that, then they're not coming to the table to necessarily solve the issue and to move forward together. They're coming to win. They're coming to battle it out. When we're coming to the table to be like, hey, like, what's going to happen here, or where are we going to go? Part of that conversation. If I can't have a conversation with you about something that is bothering me, something I need change, something that I'm happy with, bad with, whatever that is, if I'm afraid to have a conversation with you, to me, in my opinion, that's the beginning stages, like the deterioration of the relationship. It's not safe. Mm-hmm. So it can't be very honest. It has to be finessed. In my opinion, it's not genuine. It's not completely authentic. And it's not working the relationship to the power it can be. And what I mean by that is this, is that you can be a strong partner and go to therapy, go to counseling and create those spaces. Have someone show you how to create those spaces. People who are emotionally erratic like that typically need to go through therapy because it's about understanding their triggers and being able to unplug them and even just nurture and give themselves grace and understanding and forgiveness, you know, everything isn't a threat. They become a little bit, you know, safer in themselves. And then it's a lot easier once they start to trust themselves to start trusting the other people in their lives. And then the conversations, they're completely different. To be somebody that is highly emotional, erratic, who changes their responses at any given moment in time, that comes off as untrustworthy. It really does. Nobody wants to go to the table because it's really stressful and it's one of two ways, but there's very little in the middle. It's either going to be like, great, good session. All right. I'm glad I was able to give the information, or it's going to be like emotionally draining and a lot of just being spoken at, not spoken to.
Let's talk a little bit about the differences between those two, spoken at and spoken to. There's also a very big difference between listening and hearing.
Yes.
And how you choose to listen, why you choose to listen, what is the intent there? I mean, we could go an entire episode or even a series on just listening in general, but can you just give listeners out there an understanding of what the difference is between being spoken at and being spoken to? Because I think that's a very basic thing, but some people seem to just not get it.
It's funny. When I was a parole officer in the community, if somebody came in, I'm like, I don't care if you're swearing to swear, but if you're swearing at me, we're going to have an issue.
Yeah.
When you are speaking at me, this isn't a conversation. You're trying to put me in my place. When you're speaking to me, now we have a conversation. You're trying to give me feedback, asking to give me feedback. We're trying to work through something.
Right.
We're giving and taking information. I want to be part of this conversation. If you are speaking at me, I've probably already checked out.
Yeah.
If you're giving respect to the table, don't go. Don't even bother. Don't bother. Because all you're going to do is you're going to turn that table into Thunderdome. That's not going to be a safe place to interact and talk about things. That is now a battleground. And what's really bad about that is now a lot of people, what they tend to do is they'll start bringing in everything, hitting below the belt. So anything that we, you know, shared in vulnerable spots becomes bullets.
Yeah.
And that all comes back. So if we're not going with respect, if we're not going to find a solution rather than win, don't go. You're not ready to go to the table. You're ready to burn the bridge still. Don't go.
So let's talk about what needs to happen prior to getting to that point, because I think that's really important. Can we just go over some of the conversations that should be happening prior to marriage when it comes to the bedroom, when it comes to your sex life, when it comes to all of those things? Because as you talked about earlier, let's say we're married for 50 years. That's a very long time. And we talked about this in part one. Sex is almost always the first thing to go out the window. Almost always, not all the time, but pretty close. That's the number one thing that goes out the window first. It gets backburnered first.
Specifically after children.
Yeah, that's a big one.
Very rarely goes out before children.
Yeah, but it does. That's true. That's a good point.
So I did make some notes about conversations that should be had before marriage and throughout the relationship to ensure both people are still on the same page and working towards the same goals.
Yeah.
Money. Definitely talk about money before marriage. Make sure you're on the same page. Like, more people probably get divorced because of money or fight or do whatever because of money than anything else. Like, money has got to be up there with cheating. It is so stressful. One thing that my husband and I did was we knew each other's financials completely before we got married. We knew that I would have a $34,000 student loan. And his would be 13. We knew that other than that, we basically had nothing but our skills, our diploma, our degrees, and away we would go, right?
Yeah.
We knew that our spending habits were the same. We knew that we would invest the same. We knew what we would want in terms of vacationing, in terms of, you know, how we live, our lifestyles, things like that. And now it's like every month we switch and he'll do finances. The next month I'll do finances.
Oh, interesting.
Like, I've watched people scam their partners. I'm like, that's just a no. That's just a no. I've watched also a spouse will pass away and the other spouse will have absolutely no idea. And that could take months and months and months to figure out and do all that. So I'm like, you know what? This is something where it's like, it's never a question. It's just, it's always right there. Everything is completely transparent. It's all right there.
Yeah.
And it's something that we continuously talk about throughout our marriage. So money was a big one for us. Sex was a really big one for Dan and I. We talked extensively about sex beforehand. We talked about potentially opening up our marriage if it ever came to that. I could go 6 months to a year without having sex or caring about it, but that doesn't mean he should. Mm-hmm. And monogamy was just never something that was important. He'd never been monogamous before me. So, you know, we talked extensively about that. And, you know, 6 or 7 years into our marriage, we opened up our marriage and I was poly and he's ethically non-monogamous and whatever. So, but we mm-hmm. knew that beforehand. We talked about it extensively. We talked about it throughout our marriage. We continue to talk about it pretty much every freaking day. So that mm-hmm. was one. Career back and forth. We kind of went, like, we knew what we were going to do, but it was basically as long as we could be happy and have money, we were golden. The rest was like, whatever. I already had a child. We weren't sure, but this was our thought, was that if we could go 6 months in a row with the, okay, we're going to have a kid, we would try to have a kid. And that's what we did. That's what we did. Retirement. Because, you know, we're going to work and work and work. What's retirement going to look like? You know, I want to retire in Ireland. Where do you want to live? There's different ways that we like to travel. Are we going to be okay with that? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like, we went and did the Trans-Siberian from Beijing to Moscow on a train. I have no interest in doing that at all, but he should still go.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. We talked about health and wellness. Mm-hmm. Like, are you going to take care of yourself? Because that's important to me. Am I going to be a widow by the time I'm 50? Or are you going to quit smoking? Should I have somebody on the go starting around 45? Like, what am I looking at here? If you're looking to just end your life sooner rather than later, that's fine. It's your choice. But like, what am I looking at here? And then religion obviously is a big one. So basically, anything that you consider to be an important component of your marriage. So what was the expectation? What are you going to deliver? Was it delivered? What do you want later on? What are you thinking? Think of your 5-year plan, your 10-year, your 20 years. Mm-hmm. Think about those things because, yeah, you might have kids. Your career might take you a whole other way. Who knows? What's confusing to me, honestly, is like these details, these conversations, this is where I think all the romance is built. Mm. This is where you build your soulmate. This is where you guys come together and you lay it all out. And you're like, oh my gosh. Like, I don't think soulmates are just like, oh my gosh, that's them mm-hmm. with work and time and commitment. Mm-hmm. You become that. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the point of it.
Yeah.
But really difficult to have that if you don't speak, or when you do speak, it's not, you don't feel comfortable, or you feel pushed aside. Like, a lot of people are tired of trying to talk to their partner because their partner's like, oh my God, enough already. I'm tired of hearing about it. Like, let it go. Or my all-time favorite is, if you don't like it, then go. And the other person's like, well, I want to try. Like, I want to be here. And they're like, my way or the highway? And the person's like, okay, well, I guess I'll walk the highway. And they're like, okay, fine. But you're going alone and you're taking nothing and you're this, that, and the other. And it's like, okay. So.
And what Natalie's talking about is obviously the conversations that you and Dan had were what worked for you. These are the important things that for you two in particular, these are the things that you determined were the most important things. And everybody's going to have a little bit of a different variation on that list. But for the most part, you know, finances, children, careers, sex is a big one, retirement. A lot of those things that she talked about, I think are very important, but there's a big difference in, you know, when you're negotiating that or when you're sitting down to have these conversations, I think there's a very big difference between the people who will say things like it's my way or the highway. And, you know, this is what I like. It's a hard line, right? Or whatever it is. At that point, I feel like there's a much better way to go about it. Again, the difference is between talking at somebody and talking to somebody. Talking to somebody with empathy for their position and what they want and all of that is very helpful, I think, to really getting what you want really in the long term, because it is a sort of a quid pro quo scenario. And there are a lot of people who are involved in marriages where they do things they don't want to do. They're just doing it for their partner because it makes their partner happy. It brings their partner joy, whatever the case is, the whole compersion thing. We'll get into that down the line, I'm sure, as well. But I want to talk about these conversations. How do you talk to somebody with empathy, right? Because that's the question that people really tend to have a difficult time with is approaching something from an empathetic point of view, as opposed to just, you know, I'm going to hammer home my points of view and I'm not going to really care about your points of view, or I might let you say them, but I'm not going to really hear them. How do we approach our partners from an empathetic standpoint, especially if we really hadn't proven that we could do that in the past?
Well, yeah, if that has been, you know, contentious in the past of trying to talk and then it, you know, deteriorating into fights, that's going to cause a lot of trust issues too. Because mm-hmm. it's like, oh, every time they want to talk, it breaks down into like a week-long fight. I don't want to do that. Mm-hmm. Right? Mm-hmm. So that's why I say, if you're upset and you're like, it's you, don't go to the table. This is not about that.
Yeah.
A few months ago, I asked this question on one of my reels. I said, why is it that you're so happy to help out your friends, but when it comes to your spouse, it's like, different. Like, you don't want to give the same energy or whatever. And people said, well, I feel appreciated. My friends helped me feel appreciated. I feel like that's like what I do matters. So basically, the idea was that they stopped wanting to do anything for their spouse because they didn't feel appreciated. And I was like, well, how do you bring back appreciation? Mm-hmm. So it's like, how do you bring back consideration when you're going to the table, right?
Yeah.
I really feel when it comes to these two things, you just got to bite the bullet and implement it. Not passive aggressively, not any of that garbage where it's like rolling your eyes or anything, but really be like, okay, here's the deal. When you sit down to do this, it literally only impacts you and your partner. That's whose relationship it is. Mm-hmm. If you two decide you're going to fight for the next 40 years, okay, fight for the next 40 years. It literally doesn't take 1 year off my life. It doesn't take any time off anyone else's life. It's up to you to advocate for yourself for the future and relationships that you want. And if you want to do that, and if you want the other person to sit at the table with you and listen, you have to be somebody worth listening to. Nobody's going to sit there. Will you yell at them? Will you blame them? Will you, you know, you pour all this negativity over it? You're not there to do anything other than win. So nobody wants to sit there with you. If you really want change, if you really want to take back and have, you know, even a decent relationship, since you don't want to leave or you're not going to leave, I mean, just implement consideration, mm-hmm. just implement respect. At the very least, just refocus and reframe it to, it's a reflection of my character. I'm just going to be respectful no matter what, because that's who I am. It doesn't have to be a constant struggle. And that's where it comes from, is that, you know, a lot of time has passed. A lot of, you know, resentment has built bridges. So people don't really want, you know, they come and they're like huffy about it. And they're like so angry. And it's like, you have to be able to drop that at some point, because you're the only one hanging on to it.
Yeah.
It's not doing you any good. And it's literally stopping you from being happy and moving into your best life. Mm. Like, it makes no sense. But if you want to hold it, I can't stop you.
Yeah.
When it comes to anger, like, it's like holding on to the hot coal and hoping somebody else gets burned. Okay.
Yeah.
To me, that's all ego. Mm-hmm. That's like being triggered, and there might be trauma behind that or whatever, but it's like, that's all ego. That's like, nope, complete stubbornness.
Mm. Is there a way to narrow down success in a relationship to just fantastic communication? I know there's a lot of moving parts in relationships. I'm not naive to that. But if you really have two people who are willing to empathize and come to the table, and they're willing to put everything aside, cast it all aside, and just agree to be better communicators, does that relationship, does that scenario infinitely have a better chance of surviving than one that obviously doesn't?
Absolutely. But not only that, like, learning to communicate will make your relationships with everyone around you better. Mm-hmm. Everyone, not just your spouse, lover, or whoever, but everyone, because when you become a better communicator, well, you're communicating with everyone around you, the people in your life, which makes everything easier. If everything isn't a confrontation, if everything isn't a fight, life runs a lot more smoothly. It's really a lot easier. When you learn to communicate, life is just easier. Mm-hmm. You're still going to deal with assholes on a daily basis. It's going to happen. That's your test, to just be like, and that's them, not me, and away I go. Mm-hmm. Like, you can't stop at every barking dog either, because mm-hmm. you're going to get nowhere.
Yeah.
But really, at some point, you got to stop being the barking dog if you want to get anywhere.
Yeah. Okay, so here's an interesting caveat to that, or an interesting question. When you're starting out as a married couple, you have this grand idea for your life and this plan and this path you want to walk down together and all that great stuff. But we all know that that path changes. Things come up in life. Plans change based off of unexpected occurrences, and whether they're tragic or beautiful or whatever they are, that happens to get in the way. What do you do when you're in a relationship and things do pivot? Maybe not necessarily for something that's outside of your viewpoint or outside of your control, but what if it's just something that your partner has decided they want to do, or, you know, there's a change coming in their life and they want to pivot a different way? How do you deal with that when it deviates from that original plan that you put so much time and effort into prior to the marriage beginning?
I think that when two people have these conversations, or even have really good communication skills together, and they're comfortable being vulnerable in that, things like this are really quite easy to move through. And I think it's because it's always a point of conversation and not contention. I feel like there's a lot more freedom and flexibility, and because there's more respect and understanding, there's more clarity of like where each want to go, and the other is making their decisions based on that. So they're both going along together, and they both are well aware of it, and they're working together, and it's perfect. It's great. So that's wonderful. Mm-hmm. Now, for the ones who haven't had that or did not nurture that or find their formula or even look for it, it can look much different because the communication isn't necessarily good. And in a lot of times, there's a lot of finessing going on so that there's no real confrontation, mm-hmm. but the real information isn't actually being discussed. A lot of people take helpful and hurtful a little too far. If I take away information that can alter your decision, that's not a good thing.
Yeah.
Even if it's just a little bit, it's to put it on my side of the scale to get what I want. So to change all of that, it's really difficult because it's like reinventing your marriage however many years in. Like all of a sudden, I'm no longer going to finesse information. I'm no longer going to do this and I'm no longer going to do that, which is great. And you can do it. You can completely reset your relationship at any given time with your partner. You can completely do that. But to bring your partner in now, to try and have that type of safe arena of communication, I would say this. Based on the previous experiences with communication, if it was hot-headed, hot-handed, anything like that, where it was like just always confrontational, I would get a therapist to help work through communication skills so that it can start getting to that space where each person feels completely safe in speaking their truth because, you know, they're able to separate their feelings. They're able to listen and understand that it's not about them. They're not being attacked. They're just listening to how the other person feels. If it's marriage or relationship that has basically gone into, you know, dormancy and they just kind of like exist and are roommates, that's one where I personally would go over and say, hey, what about we have a family meeting and we see about refocusing and resetting our relationship so that whatever it looks like, we're more engaged, so that we're more engaged in life even. It's more amicable. This is what I would like to do. I would, you know, I need you on board for this. I would like you on board for this. I think when we come back to the table and we want to bring our partner, it's important to bring tact. It's important to bring compassion. You want to bring patience. Mm-hmm. And it's about bringing them in to be like, hey, what if we dropped all the weapons and all the armor? And we just brought back in consideration for one another. We brought back in respect. And we just spoke because it's your life and your future. It's my life and my future. I don't want to live miserable or passive aggressive or in dormancy. I don't want to live on autopilot. I want to be able to live like an engaged life with the people around me, in my home, to have a life. What does that look like now? Does that include sex anymore? Maybe not. That's okay. When we go to the table for conversation, it doesn't mean you're going to get what you want. It means you're going to get the ball rolling. And here's the thing. If you're thinking about going to the table, you want change anyway. Mm-hmm. You could never, ever, ever, ever choose the outcome if you were honest. But you can choose how you deliver that information. You could choose those things. Tact, delivery, behaviors, those are all things you can choose. Response, you cannot. But the reality is that if your marriage is in dormancy or if it's like, you know, erratic in that, you need change anyway. So what better place to start than through conversation? Because then at least we're working through things. And when we work through things, well, then we can have clarity. And also when we work through things, we can let go of a lot of emotion, a lot of misunderstanding, a lot of hurt feelings, a lot of blame, a lot of stagnant and old emotions that just don't actually belong there anymore. But we've just basically hiked along because, you know, it packs along nicely with resentment. Mm. To be able to reset a marriage that has been riddled with, you know, a lot of resentment, a lot of bridges, distance, things like that, that can be done. Easily, that can be done. Mm. You just have to come with the attitude of, listen, I'm not going anywhere. You're not going anywhere. Can we talk about this? Can we have some accountability? Can we offer forgiveness? Can we give a little grace? Can we like let go of a lot of things? Can we work through others? Can we try to find some common ground so that we can both be happy? And you know what? If we don't want to remain together, but we have to in this point in time, what about if we use this time to actually just help one another get ahead and get better so that when we can just evolve out? Like, we don't have to make it miserable. It doesn't have to be angry. It doesn't have to be passive aggressive. It doesn't have to be the constant silent, fuck you. It doesn't have to be any of those things. Those are all choices we make. Now, I get it. Some people are really good at communication. And they want to communicate. But the person they are trying to communicate with, well, they don't want to comprehend what you're say, they are hell bent on misunderstanding you. They don't want to come to the table. They don't want to know those things. They don't care. Some people just want to argue and they want to fight. 2 + 2 = 9. You're absolutely right. Enjoy your day. True. I'm only giving energy where we're going to move forward. That's it. That's all I'm here for. If you're happy in your situation, although you're miserable, well, you've chosen it. You've actively chosen it, short of a gun being to your head. So there you go. You have free will. You're well within your right to live like that. If your happiness is misery, eat it up. I wouldn't choose that, but I have my own life and I choose mine. That's the beauty of it. You have yours, you choose yours. Just be honest about it so that your partner can choose theirs accordingly. It's not hard, but if you think your partner is not going to be on board with you and you finesse information, you just have a silent hostage.
All right, let's go one step further.
Okay.
Earlier, you talked about the conversations that you and Dan had prior to getting married. Yeah. And opening the marriage, non-monogamy was one of those conversations. What if we hadn't had those conversations prior? And let's say we're married for 6 years, 8 years, 10 years, and one of us decides we want to open the marriage. How do you have that conversation when you hadn't had those conversations prior?
Oh, that's a good question.
Mm-hmm.
If you have that safe arena, you can have that conversation. It's about making sure you're in a space where there's no distractions. It's comfortable. You know what you want. You've done enough that you know what you want and you can express this to them. Here's the thing. A lot of people will talk about, maybe I want an open marriage. And then their partner will start discussing it with them. And a lot of times, just being able to freely speak about stuff does so much. It does so much. It alleviates. It's like being able to talk about stress. As soon as you can talk about it and feel like you're heard, it just washes away. It does. A lot of people, they want to have experiences, they want to have interactions, but they don't necessarily want to have sex with other people. Things like mm-hmm. that, right? When you have that safe spot, when you can go to the table and just be like, hey, I want to talk about sex. I want to talk about our future and I want to talk about monogamy. And I want to talk about like where you are and what you want and like, and myself as well. I am changing. I am evolving. I know that I have had some interest in polyamory or in ethical non-monogamy. I was wondering about your thoughts on that. If you had any thoughts, if, you know, if you ever think about it, if we could talk about it, maybe things like that, mm-hmm. you know, does it make you uncomfortable? Because these are things that like are triggering interests in me.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what's really important is how that other partner responds is going to determine the tone of that conversation, right? Because if you feel shamed, embarrassed or anything, that conversation is now done. Not only that, but that one partner who's like thinking about other relationship styles or like, you know, exploring sex with their partner is no longer open to that conversation there.
Mm-hmm.
That's either going underground, which I think it will. It would be like a speakeasy of information they'll collect along the way. I think it's very, very, very difficult, if not incredibly impossible, for two people to be sexually different and not flexible.
Interesting. Well, you answered the question from the point of view of the person who wants to take that step, and you touched on it, but let's expand on a little bit. If I am in a marriage with you and we're 10 years in and I want to open the marriage and you are absolutely not wanting to do that, you are very rooted in monogamy and that's what you signed up for and that's what you want and that's what your belief system holds and all of those things, what is your role? If I'm coming to tell you, in that safe space that we've created, what is the role of the person that is receiving this information now? Because I know that when you receive information like that, you can freak out.
Yeah.
It can be a very big bombshell. You start immediately thinking, oh my God, is my spouse cheating on me? Are they going to go off and have these conversations and start texting people and doing all these things, you know, just because they felt like, hey, I brought it up. I let them know. What is your responsibility as the person who's receiving that information if you're just not in agreement to it, if it goes against what you feel?
I do not recommend negotiating away your monogamy if you do not want to.
Mm-hmm.
Monogamy is respectable when it is practiced by two people who do it with integrity and dignity. There's nothing wrong with monogamy. I am not saying throw out monogamy at all. Absolutely not. And do not negotiate it away. If your partner decides that they are now poly or ethical non-monogamy and you don't want to be part of that, it's time to find a pathway out.
Mm-hmm.
And if they want to explore that, it's the same as when somebody later in their years discovers they're bisexual and their partner will say, if you want to explore that, we're done then.
Yeah.
It's your choice, but I'm not going to open because I'm monogamous. It doesn't matter that you're going to you know, explore with the same sex. It doesn't matter. I'm monogamous. There's no third party. If you're going to explore that, we're going to evolve out into different lives. Like we're getting a divorce. Whatever that looks like, it's done.
I think that's the rub, right? I think that's the little pocket that so many people slip into in this situation is because of what you just said, which I think is that is what excites me to talk about on the show with you is these types of things, because that is a brick wall you're running into at that point. And maybe you don't want to end your marriage as the person, let's say, who wants the open marriage or who is interested in it or whatever step you want to take. Maybe you don't want to lose your marriage even more. So you're stuck between a position of, do I tell my spouse this? Do I let my spouse in on that? Or do I risk the marriage simply by bringing it up? And that is the area that I think a lot of, especially men, fall into when they're in that position, because they don't want to lose their marriage. They don't want to lose what they've built necessarily. Maybe they really care about it, but they've also got this real crazy desire on the other side, and they're sort of caught in the middle. How do we navigate that as people who have desires and have needs and have these things, but don't want to maybe risk the most important relationship you'll ever have, which is your spouse?
Here's the thing. When I say, hey, monogamy, you know, when don't negotiate away your monogamy, I mean that. But I want to follow that up by saying, what does monogamy mean to you? And are you practicing it the way it should be?
Yeah.
The way that you promised your partner it would be. Because it's one thing to say, I'm monogamous. It's another thing to be sexless. Those are not interchangeable.
Fuck.
You sign on for monogamy, right? You sign on for monogamy. You don't sign up for sexlessness.
Yeah.
I wouldn't fucking sign on for that. And short of there being a medical reason, I'm not signing on for that. Hell no. So if you want monogamy, okay. What does that look like to you? And for how long? Because forever is a long, long time. And it keeps getting longer with modern medicine, for fuck's sakes.
Be 200 years old, been married for 200 years.
So it's great that you only want to have sex with me for the rest of your life. But is that 5 years or 65 years? Are you going to maintain that along the way? Now, for the people that are like, you know, I don't want to forgo my relationship, but I really want to be poly, but my spouse doesn't want me to be. Well, now it's about deciding what type of person you want to be.
Yeah.
Who's ethically non-monogamy, and then there's a cheater. It's one thing to want to be ethically non-monogamous, but if you're cheating, you're not accomplishing it. Right? And anybody that is ethically non-monogamous, in my opinion, should only be with ethically non-monogamous. Single or whatever.
Right.
But not those cheating. Like, I did not do all this work to like be super honest and everything with my husband to then fucking help somebody else cheat. What? No, I don't need that bad energy. Like, if I can tell my husband, hey, let's open the marriage and like we can have relations with other people, there's nothing I can't tell him. Like,
yeah, no. Early in the conversation tonight, you talked about marriage formulas, and we're going to end on the marriage formulas, and we're going to talk a little bit more about that in a little bit. But you said something that was really important. You said, obviously, one size doesn't fit all. It's a tailored formula based off the couple that's in question, right? That we're working with, or that you're working with, I should say. Would it be accurate if I were to tell you, and I think I know the answer to this, that monogamy is also not a one-size-fits-all scenario? Monogamy, as you just mentioned, looks very different. You have to determine, what does monogamy look like to you? Does that mean you can't even text anybody of the opposite sex? Does that mean you can't physically cheat? There's so many different things. It's such a big umbrella. And I think that's just really important to sort of hammer that home, that one-size-fits-all aspect of monogamy, it's not going to be that. It's not going to be the case. It's going to be different for every couple. Everybody looks at this differently.
To take something as big as marriage and think that you're just going to carbon copy it and be happy is bonkers to me. Come on. That's not a thing. It's all, everything is in the details. That's where you find your formula together to have your best life, so that you're not sitting there going, I never get sex. I hate my partner. We don't talk. Yeah, because you didn't marry your best friend. You didn't even marry someone you liked. So that is a reflection. Your marriage is a reflection of the work you do in it.
Your marriage is a reflection of the work you do in it.
I know for a lot of people, they're like, that's harsh. I know. But that is still the way it is. I get that not everybody has great choices and they don't like those. I totally understand it, but it doesn't negate the reality of it all. To me, if you're happy in a miserable relationship because it feels empowering to you, man, fill your boots. What do I care? I don't care. It's about being just engaged and active in your own life so that you're not just floating along. And then one day you're like, wait a minute, what happened here? I did not sign on for this. This is not something, this is not enjoyable. I've just kind of like let the last however long go.
Listeners tonight have heard us say the term ethical non-monogamy, ENM, for folks who love acronyms. That's a really popular term right now, ethical non-monogamy. How do I ask this question to you? Is ethical non-monogamy one of the tickets to revitalizing marriage and changing things in marriage just for a modern age, for a modern audience? Because I feel like we talked about this on Me and My Friends. Marriage today is not marriage how it was when our grandparents were married and great-grandparents were married. It's a very different thing now. It's a very different, ideologies are different. It's just very, very different. Is ethical non-monogamy like a natural evolution of what marriage is, in your opinion? Or is that just another option? Is it just something else that a couple can engage in if they decide they both want to do that together?
Oh yeah, for sure. Because monogamy is a complete and utter fucking failure, mostly. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you take monogamy and like, no, seriously, think about it.
Yeah.
Think about the cheating rates. Think about the people who just exist in like two strangers with four walls, but hey, they have a certificate.
Oh yeah. I know, we talked about it on the last episode. Yeah. The stats. Yeah.
Yeah. I think people need to start talking about it, because I think that ethical non-monogamy comes with a lot of non-attachment.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that bothers people who have attachment. But it's like, it's more of connection. It's about experiences and interactions and how you evolve and things like that. It's not about having, you know, three children and a white picket fence and yada, yada. You can still have all those things. Mm-hmm. But like when it comes to that component, when it comes to sex, when it comes to intimacy and that, there are just people who are not monogamous. Mm-hmm. They're just not built that way. They just aren't. Just like there are people who are strictly monogamous, that's what they want, and they won't go for anything else. People who are non-monogamous, it's completely, there's nothing wrong with it. Everybody's in the know. They participate how they want or whatever that looks like.
Mm-hmm.
Now, is everyone ethical? Probably not.
Yeah.
But it's like any other relationship, you just represent yourself in the relationship. That's really all you can do. I'm not here to tell everybody, like when people come to me and they're like, you know, 34% of whatever do this, cool. You know, sounds like something good you could read in a lecture, I suppose. What do I care?
Yeah. Talking to you during part one and you talking about, you know, I fired off all those incredible stats at you, and your response to that was, I don't really look at stats too much. But I started thinking about that after our conversation, probably that night or a couple nights later. And I thought, yeah, she's right. Because really, if you and I are in a marriage and we're sitting here and we're fighting for our marriage, we could have all the stats we want. Those stats aren't going to help us at all. We are in our situation, in our lives.
Yeah,
you could look at, oh, well, 75% of couples divorce after dot, dot, dot. It's like, okay, so what? We're not involved in that. We're worried about us.
Yeah. Is that going to be on the quiz? What do I give a fuck? Yeah. Like, I'm not taking a quiz. This isn't sociology. I don't give a shit. I don't care why 75% of whoever does whatever, because I work with couples and I just get them from A to B. I'm asking questions out here so that the people who are going through it, they can think for themselves. I don't even give a shit if anyone answers or not. This isn't about me. I'm not out here grading people. I'm just being like, hey, think about it. If you're not going to leave this situation, that's okay. How do you still live your best life? How do you still have happiness? How do you work together? Well, everything happens through conversation and comprehension.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. It's like communication is key. Okay. But without comprehension, you're still locked out.
You know, we're going to be talking a lot about communication. This is a communication podcast. I mean, if I could sum it into one word, it'd be communication. So that's where our wheelhouse is. That's where we're going to be. But I think people confuse communication a lot of times. I have talked to several couples who have open marriages, who are practicing ethical non-monogamy in one way or another. You know, it's very different for every couple and every situation. You won't believe, well, you probably would believe, but I can't believe, let's just put it that way, I can't believe how many people are in ethical non-monogamous situations and are just of like this real high level knowledge base on it. So like I talked to a couple just a couple of days ago, and I was talking to the wife, and the husband, you know, they're ethical non-monogamous. They both kind of go outside the marriage from time to time, or they have friends or they have people that they hang out with. But the wife was telling me, you know, oh, I don't really need to know all the details. I'm more of like a high level, like, you know, just kind of keep me in play high level, just so I know kind of what's going on. But I don't need to know or necessarily want to know all of the details between, you know, her spouse and her spouse's friend, let's just put it that way. That is very interesting, but people might look at that and think, well, they're not communicating. On the contrary, I think what's working for that particular couple is that they have communicated to each other what they want or what they expect in that ethical non-monogamous venue, for lack of a better word, and they are giving it to each other the way that spouse wants it. And I think that's communication. You tell me what you want, I will give it to you in that way to the best of my ability. And they're doing what works for them. And they've been married for 9 years and they've been open for 7. And it's like, it works. And it's incredible how people will look at that and think, well, they're not being communicative. From the folks that I've talked to, they're very open. They're very communicative. And that's why they can have those types of requests and, you know, for it to be high level or whatever the case is. So I don't know if that'll make the show, but I just wanted to let you know that it's been interesting for me to hear those conversations and hear like, oh shit, it's pretty amazing that a woman wouldn't want to know. I want to know every detail. I want to know everything. She's like, no, I'm good. You went out with her tonight? Cool. That's all I need.
When people say, well, they're not communicating. Here's the difference. They have flipped the details that are important.
Mm-hmm.
The attention's in the details, but they have flipped what details are important. It wasn't the sex. It was the location and safety and you're good.
Yep.
They did communicate quite well, but me and Dan don't talk about it either because our partners absolutely deserve privacy.
Mm-hmm.
That's something that but Dan and I are different. So a lot of people, you know, they'll swing, they'll have yada, yada, yada. Mm-hmm. But we actually have two separate single lives.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that I belong to a lifestyle or any of that. Like, I don't claim any of that. I'm married and I have a single side. My husband's married. He has a single side. We mm-hmm. do whatever we want, whatever. Yeah. Mm-hmm. 1 week a month, I go to the States and I hang out and I date and yada, yada, yada. That's something that we've always talked about, but we do not talk about details at all because that's just not something we've ever cared about. And it's funny because we weren't sure how we were going to feel at the beginning. And after the first time, it was like, yeah, we just do not need to. It's like, you're safe. You're good. Everything's good. Perfect. What's great is like, I don't sit there and think about it, mm-hmm. but there's no jealousy. Mm-hmm. It's not about that.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I want him to have experiences and interactions and as many as he has. And I hope they're all really amazing and good and help him grow and evolve as the person he wants to be.
Mm-hmm.
I can't give him all of those.
Mm-hmm.
I can't. It's not possible.
Bam. Just hearing you talk about that's amazing. We weren't going to go here on this particular episode, but let's touch on it at least a little bit to kind of maybe preview what's coming forward. When you had those conversations with him, can you share what those conversations look like around opening your marriage when the time came? Because I feel like people who do this, they just do it so wrong. They do it so incorrectly. You've been married for 18 years. You're obviously doing something very, very right. I want to really point out not only the pitfalls of what could happen if you don't do things correctly, but when you do, I want to be able to talk about that. So, I mean, can you talk a little bit about kind of what that looked like? Do you remember going back that far and thinking about those conversations and how you wanted to bring it to him?
It was really tough for me. Like, I was really drowning in kind of suburbia. It mm-hmm. was the mom and wife, but I really had no or not much of an identity for myself. And it felt like I really struggled with nihilism.
Mm.
Of like nothingness, like there's no way that this can be my life. Like, I'm just ready for death. Mm-hmm. Like, this is just too much. Like, it's too much. So I had sat with Dan and we'd spoken and I'd said to him, like, hey, I don't know what it's going to look like, but I need more of something, life. I don't know. And we talked before and, you know, about opening, you know, and he asked, he's like, do you want a divorce? I was like, absolutely not.
Yeah.
I don't.
Yeah.
I feel like this can't be it.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like I missed a lot along the way, and I'm not sure what that looks like. I don't feel like I've had enough experiences or interactions to really become the person I want to be. And that doesn't necessarily, like, that does not mean like, oh, I'm going to go out and get plowed every weekend. Like, yeah, almost no one made it to the promise.
Right.
It's just about having the freedom to choose everything that I want to do.
Mm-hmm.
I think what's really important, and I really, really, really want to drive this point home, okay? When I went to Dan and I expressed this, the best thing, you know, what he did was, when I look back and I'm like, you know, he really took this information well and, you know, and we talked about it a lot. And one thing that I know for sure that I can tell you about Dan is that when I go to Dan about something that's going on with me, anything that I need to change or whatever, he doesn't take it personally.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't make it about him. He doesn't, if I go and I'm like, I'm unhappy, he doesn't say, why do I make you unhappy? He says, well, what's going on that you're not happy with? Like, he's like somebody that's like, I can't give you happiness, but I can contribute.
Mm-hmm.
When I was struggling in the early years of our marriage, he said, Natalie, I'll listen to you till the end of time. But one day you might want to talk to somebody that can give you answers.
I can't wait to have him on the show. That's going to be so great.
Well, when you partner up for life, It's for life. It sh and I know I'm saying this and it's like, oh, well said, Natalie, you're only on your second marriage.
Oh,
But
so
it's like,
what? Yeah.
Right. What I'm saying is that, like, if that is your plan and come hell or high water, we're not parting ways.
Yeah.
If it is till death do us part and not a fucking minute beforehand, then for the love of all things holy, please take to love and honor with you. Please take to have and hold with you. Please honor your partner. Please hold them with grace. Please understand that when they're talking about their feelings, they're not necessarily attacking you. And when you're talking to your partner, talk about how you feel, not how they necessarily make you feel,
mm-hmm.
but how you feel in these moments.
Mm-hmm.
What they mean to you. Start having conversations that don't start with you did this, or, you know, that aren't going to bring about the other feeling defensive or confrontational. There's a difference in telling someone, hey, you're a fucking liar, and in this point in time, you lied, or in this point in time, you behaved dishonestly. You know, one is talking about the person and their whole character. The other is talking about this very specific time and place. Sometimes it's about slowing down. Write it out. If you don't know how you're feeling and it feels tumultuous in there and turbulent, you're not going to have very good communication skills when you try to express that to your partner. If you don't know how you feel, how are you going to express it?
Yeah.
And mostly it's about slowing down and just rethinking about it. Like, this is your partner.
Mm-hmm.
If you need to change the dynamic of your marriage, well, you need them on board with that. So that's a conversation. That's bringing in respect.
Mm-hmm.
That's speaking to them, not at them. That's wanting their input, wanting their feedback. I mean, I wonder how many people, okay. I wonder how many people I could get that have listened or will listen to go and ask their partner for genuine feedback on them being a spouse or partner.
Yeah, let's do that. There is going to be homework on this show. I think that's an excellent first piece of homework. Yeah. So give our listeners their homework. I'm sorry I interrupted you, but you got me fired up about it. What would you like folks to go and do after hearing this particular part two of our series?
Ask three questions.
Okay.
What do you love about our marriage? What would you change about our marriage? And what would you throw out?
Mm.
And the last one, you're not allowed to pick each other.
And for the love of God, if I can add anything to what Natalie just expertly laid out for you folks, it's let your partner get it out. That's a really important thing, because as I talked about earlier, men, we're especially guilty of this, but everybody is. If we want something in our marriage, look, I will just tell you that it's always going to be a no if you just don't ask. But if you talk about things and you're able to get it out and you have an environment that you've created as a unit where your partner allows you to get stuff onto the table, you know, sometimes it's not very pretty. Sometimes it's a very ugly, you know, verbal diarrhea, but you're just getting it out so you can kind of make sense of it and figure out what you actually want, what you're actually asking, what you're asking of your partner. So I always tell people that if you're on the other side of it and you're receiving what your partner is laying out, your first job is to let them get it out. Let them get it out onto the table. And then your second job is to practice a little bit of what Natalie was talking about, giving your partner grace, giving them some empathy, talking to them, not at them. If you can just practice those things, I think, you know, you'll see a definite transformation in your marriage. Even if it's not a monumental one, you'll see a definite transformation, because so many people, to your point earlier in the conversation tonight, so many people are terrified of just having these conversations. There is this overwhelming sense of fear. And a job for a show like this is to eliminate some of or all of that fear and allow your partner to communicate things to you that you maybe never knew they were thinking about. That's what unlocks the door, I think, to a lot of marriages, sort of breaking through that, you know, kind of dialing it up to 11 and breaking through that wall of communication that just was, it was just impossible at some point, you know, let them get it out. And I think you'll see a difference almost instantly. You know, I really do. I believe that it worked for me. It's worked for a lot of different people. I know it's much, much, much easier said than done. But I think if you can just get to that step one, you'll see a big change. I think most change happens when you take that first step.
When we bring back conversation, then we can start moving forward. But just remember, what you say isn't nearly as important as how you say it.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So if you want to be heard, be someone worth listening to, check your body language and show up wanting to reach a solution and work through together, not Thunderdome.
Mm-hmm.
If you already have Thunderdome, it makes no sense to do this. You can really clean up a lot when you bring back respect, being heard, being seen, you know, reconnecting. It doesn't mean you're going to get everything you want. And it doesn't even mean that it's going to go back to the way it was. But come on, if you guys are going to do this together and the commitment is forever, the commitment can stay forever. You can still be flexible and evolve the marriage and relationship so that life is good.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to look at the people around you for how they're having their marriage. It doesn't matter. It's their marriage. Who cares? It's funny. I remember when I first started to invest and this person goes, oh, you invest way more than other people. Like, you're doing better. I was like, oh, I don't live my life compared to other people.
Mm.
I don't care. I don't care how you run your marriage because it's not my marriage.
Mm-hmm.
I don't care how you invest because not mine.
Mm-hmm.
You're investing what you need to for you. I don't invest a certain amount compared to everyone else. I invest so that this is my baseline forever. I don't run my marriage based on how my parents did or how other people do. I run it based on what makes Dan happy and what makes me happy and what helps us get everything we want in life. Just because other people think monogamy is everything to live and die on, great. Build your relationship around monogamy. It has nothing to do with me.
Mm-hmm.
I don't need that in mind because it's not a requirement. We don't thrive in it. Neither one of us want it. So why would we have it?
Yeah. Yeah.
We travel a lot together. I mean, we just did like Machu Picchu and all that, but we travel almost always apart because we like to travel differently, but we're still going to travel because the alternative is what? Neither one of us gets to go and we get to sit on the couch and watch reruns. No, thanks. It's still my life. I want to have experiences and he doesn't want to have all those experiences and vice versa. He still has to live
mm-hmm.
because you know what? I want all of his stories. I want what he brings to the table. I want him to have these massive adventures so that when we are retired and we can't go anywhere, I can hear all about them again and again.
Mm-hmm.
I like that. I like watching him grow. I like watching him, you know, make music. I like watching him travel to places that he's always wanted to go.
Mm-hmm.
I like that he tries different foods. I love all of that stuff. Am I going to do it? No, I'm absolutely not going to do it. But when he brings it home, I can't wait to hear about it. I can't wait to taste it all. I can't wait to like watch all the pictures, everything.
Mm-hmm.
But just because I don't want it doesn't mean he shouldn't. And that was something we talked about extensively as well.
You know what that is, folks? That is called engagement. That's what that is. You just heard Natalie talk about Dan having a separate life, essentially having separate adventures, separate experiences, all that stuff. But when he comes home and he wants to talk about it, if he wants to talk about it, she's not only willing to talk about it, but she's engaged and she's in the moment and she's present and she wants to taste the things that he's tasted and hear about the experiences he's had and all those things that you just talked about. I think that's a big deal that people seem to miss. People just want engagement. If I'm talking to you about something and I'm passionate, I'm fired up about it, you might not really give a shit about it. But if you are engaging with me and you're in the moment with me, that's what I want, right? That's this, almost like a serotonin hit. It's really important because I care about you enough to tell you about something that really excites me.
Yeah.
The least you can do is show a little engagement. And you are expertly crafting that with your husband, which I think is, look, if you're going to do that with anybody in your life, it might as well be your spouse. Well, of course, your kids too, but your spouse is a big deal. And that's, people just forget about that. She just fucking slips her mind.
If you're married or in a long-term relationship, your co-pilot,
yeah,
you're in a boat together. If that's your marital boat, why are you so good with like not having it like running top notch?
Right.
Why are you not encouraging and helpful to your co-pilot? Why are you not working together? Why is it becoming passive aggressive and hateful and full of resentment and working against one another? Why is it becoming petty?
Mm.
What happened here? When did we stop talking and when did we stop trying? And when did that become like the business we're going to stand on and die on? Like we're doing something. The only thing we're doing is holding on to anger and wasting away.
As we wrap up tonight, I do want to talk about something you mentioned earlier, and we'll talk a lot more about this probably in part three and then even beyond that throughout really this series. But you talked about marriage formulas. We talked about monogamy, ethical non-monogamy formulas, and not having a one-size-fits-all. Well, that's even more important when it comes to just a marriage formula in general. And you have very specific formulas, but that's the most important thing is that it's really, folks, it's not a one-size-fits-all thing. I know that's, you know, you're going to hear that ad nauseum. I know that's cliche to say, but can you talk a little bit about precisely why a one-size-fits-all, a blanket approach doesn't work when it comes to marriage formulas.
Well, yeah, because we all have different interests and likes and desires. That's like saying everybody likes the same sex. I assure you that's not a thing.
No, it's not.
We have different hobbies, different wants. We have different pathways we want to take in our lives. Some people want to really follow a religious route.
Mm-hmm.
Some people want to have children and just travel everywhere. They want to be nomads.
Mm-hmm.
Not everybody wants to have the nuclear family, the 9-to-5, those things. Not everybody wants to live in suburbia. Not everybody wants the standard. Not everybody even wants to participate in what we see as society. They want to break free. It's like me. I stay within all the legalities of everything. It's just society norms. I'm just not really a part of much.
Mm-hmm.
It's becoming more normal as I push my voice, but really, I'm still kind of on the outside, right?
Yeah.
And I'm okay with that because now I'm living the life that I really want and I really enjoy. So I don't really look to others anymore to be like, wait, are you happy? Why am I doing that? Should I be doing that? Does that make you happy? Maybe I should do that. And then I'm like faking it while everybody else seems to be making it. And I'm like, there has to be more to life than this because this cannot be my life. If this is life, oh my gosh, I'm on a conveyor belt mm-hmm. and I need somebody to implement happiness somewhere because I can't conjure it up. Right. So when I went to Dan and we spoke at length about everything and it became very clear that it was like, holy, we can do whatever the hell we want. It doesn't matter. It literally doesn't matter. If he wants to play music and travel with the band, he can do that. As long as I support him, who cares?
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to be a writer in New York. He's like, go do it. He goes, you can't do it like the way you want to do, but once a month you can go and do it. You can have a different version to the original vision. We could still be the unorthodox people that we always were. We could still be those weird eccentric people that wanted to not ride desks,
mm-hmm.
to not do those things. We wanted to pave different ways. We didn't want to be attached to buying things or keeping up with the Joneses. And in order to do that, it really became important that we pave our own path and become comfortable in who we are and our truth so that we weren't looking to the outside for where we should find our formula. Because that formula, oh, it made me depressed. It made me sad. It made me feel unfulfilled. It made me feel broken. It made me feel anger, resentment. It made me feel nihilistic, like there's just absolutely no point. How is everybody happy in this? And I'm like silently screaming for 4 hours a night, not even knowing that my husband was too, until I went and talked to him. So we all have these formulas, and it's like, talk every night. You talk daily, you talk regularly, and that's how you find your formula. It's through repetition. It's like math. Math is all formulas,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
You take those formulas and you run through it and you get your answer. Now, don't get me wrong. It does take practice. Math takes practice. It's like, you know, some people excelled at math. Most people did mediocre at math and some people did really bad at math, but they had help. So it kind of helped them along the way.
Mm-hmm.
Your marriage formula is going to take time. It's going to take repetition for you to find that. But once you find that and you work that, that's when it becomes smooth. You're both participating. This is exactly what you want. You're not trying to find happiness on somebody else's formula that you just don't want to participate in. If it doesn't fit for you and your partner is on board, that's all you need. You don't need anyone else on board. Your formula is for you and your partner.
Mm-hmm.
That's who you need to be speaking with. That's where you need to build that arena so that you can get vulnerable and in those details, because it's those details that are going to flush out the formula. And it takes a lot of talking and discussing. It takes a lot of truth and honesty to get there. But once you have your formula, man, that is all she wrote. Yep, I truly believe that. Like I said, it's like math. Here's your formula. Work it. And if you work it and you keep doing it and doing it and doing it, you will find it. It will become a rhythm and you will figure it out. So instead of your dad yelling at you at the kitchen table, it's me.
Yeah.
And it's funny because I remember seeing all these memes about the math formulas and I'm like, oh my gosh, all becoming clear now. No wonder it's so tumultuous at the table.
Yeah.
It's one of those things where it's like, it might be the most vulnerable bonding experience you'll do because You're building something that's real. It's authentic. It's not manipulated or finessed. You're allowing your partner to be and say who they are, and you can, and it's real. And it's not about liking everything, but it's about being able to accept it so that you can make the appropriate choices and decisions for yourself moving forward. Mm-hmm. It's not supposed to be perfect. I mean, you literally have two people, completely different people, trying to find their place in the world together and independently and be happy together and independently. Mm-hmm. It's tough.
It is tough.
But it's much tougher and almost impossible without conversation.
Yeah.
Now, some people are really good at conversation and they're really good at listening and comprehending and getting through it. And they find a partner that's the same and away they go. And it's super easy and it looks like lock and step. And it does. And sometimes it's like that. And for others, it's like, why can we not get over this fucking bump? You know what I mean? And it's sometimes when it's like that, it's like, well, maybe we need a little bit of therapy. Maybe we need a little bit of healing. Maybe we need to go back and like figure out what actually happened there. Why can't we let go? Mm-hmm. You know, why aren't we healing around that?
Well, and with that, we will wrap part two of our series, our 10-part series for season one of the show. Remember, homework between parts two and three. Ask yourself these three questions. Let's see if you can do this with your partner. What do you love about our marriage? What would you change about our marriage? And what would you throw out in regards to our marriage? Natalie Warner, Chris Williamson, we will see you all in 2 weeks.
This is Chris Williamson, and thank you for listening to Hear Me Out, a Married and Single podcast. We hope you enjoyed the show. Please visit us on social media where you can interact with our hosts, hear bonus content, and follow each new conversation as it airs. That handle is Hear Me Out Talk. Reviews are crucial to the show. Please visit your favorite podcatcher to leave us your thoughts and review. It really does help get the word out. Your hosts for the show are Natalie Warner and Chris Williamson. The podcast is edited by Chris Williamson. Our show's opening and closing music is Don't Fail Me Now by Stella Fox. See you in 2 weeks. Can it be?